Hello, my name is Natalie Savelle. Welcome to the Stepmom Strong podcast. This show is for stepmamas or anyone dating a parent, really, all about how to navigate the challenges that come up in this complicated and often underestimated role. I'll be bringing you tips, tricks, validation, and support so that you know that you don't have to feel alone in this role, and there are ways to make things a little less overwhelming. I hope you enjoy. Hi everyone, Natalie here. In this next episode that's a re-release from the Empowering Stepmom series, I talk with Dr. Lene St. John, and we talk about sex, y'all. So we talk about how to talk to kids about sex, and what's appropriate and not. And it's super helpful, especially just because it's a, you know, it's a thing that kids deal with these days. And it helps just to get a sense for how to navigate this sometimes tricky conversation. A lot of us grew up without parents who talked a lot about it. So I really appreciated her input, and I think you will too. So go ahead and enjoy this episode, and I'll see you on the other side. All right, bye.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the virtual interview series, Empowering Stepmoms, Reimagining the Modern Family. I'm your host, Natalie Savelle of Stepmom Strong Coaching, where I help stepmoms go from overwhelm, resentment, confusion, and stress to confidence, clarity, and connection. And today we have Dr. Lene St. John, who's also known as Mama Sutra. Welcome, Dr. Lene. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
So Dr. Lene St. John is known as Mama Sutra, as I just said. She's a board-certified sexologist with the American College of Sexologists and a professor of human sexuality at City College of San Francisco. She's been named one of the top 100 sex blogging superheroes by Kinkley.com every year since 2013. What a huge accomplishment. That is amazing. she has a strong social media presence and teaches courses in the Bay Area using her five building blocks to a healthy sexuality: communication, consent, respect, pleasure, and fantasy, which we're going to be talking about today. I'm very excited to dive in. Dr. Lene has been quoted in Forbes.com, Huffington Post, Livestrong.com, Pop Sugar, and Women's Health Magazine, and she's been a guest on multiple podcasts, including Sex Out Loud, Sex Nerd Sandra, and Sexology. In addition, she's a writer and blogger with an upcoming parenting book that has a human sexuality focus. Lene lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with her partner and two daughters. So we're so excited to hear about what you do and what you teach families and parents and kids. And yeah, how did you, so first off, how did you start this company and how did you become known as the Mama Sutra?
Okay, well, I'm kind of laughing because the family is home today and I can kind of hear over the background. The Mama Sutra, actually, gosh, it was right when I went back to school to study sexuality. My kids were really young. Well, this was now back in 2009, 2010. And we were into the Bay Area Derby girls, you know, roller derby. So we were really interested in, you know, watching this roller derby, and we would go to the different events. And one night we were trying to come up with roller derby names for ourselves. And like Kama Sutra, Mama Sutra. So that was how that started.
So, right. I like and, that.
Yeah. So, and fortunately, I had a colleague in class, one of my classes at the Institute, and she was wise enough to give me the advice to trademark it. So I trademarked it like right away. It took a few years, but so yeah, I am the Mama Sutra.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what do you do? Tell us a little bit about like what your main focus is now with the Mama Sutra trademark. How do you use it?
Well, so I do have a book that a manuscript that I wrote. It was with an agent trying to sell it for a couple of years, but I think I'm going to actually self-publish it. I have one more place I'm going to look, but yeah, I wrote this book that's based on the five building blocks to a healthy sexuality, and we'll talk about those too. Yeah, so I'm an educator. I teach human sexuality classes at CCSF, which is the first free city community college. So if you're a resident, you can take classes there for free. Yeah, it's I used to work more with clients, and then I started focusing a little more on on the teaching aspect and on finishing the book. And just recently I've started taking clients on again. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of the most of what I'm doing. Oh, and also I write a lot about, you know, sex and sexuality and things like that.
Right. Yeah. So what do you see as being the biggest like challenge that you see faced by, maybe culturally or, you know, as a society, what's challenging about how we raise our kids and help them understand sexuality? That's a big question.
Well, that's actually a really complex question to answer because I see a lot of areas where we could improve. So one thing that's in the news right now and sort of overwhelmingly in some aspects, if you dive deep into this incel community, I mean, these things show up with different names all the time, but it's really, they're misogynists. And I heard one person report that they're recruiting 15 and 16 year old boys. And that's like a really tender age for 15 and 16 year old boys who, you know, they really want to connect with someone, you know, whether it's dating or, you know, what, in whatever way they want to connect. Right. And so I think one of the biggest risks we have right now is making sure that parents are talking to their kids, you know, teaching that it's okay to get a no answer, right? Mm-hmm. So if I ask you, do you want to do this thing and you really aren't interested, it should be okay that you say no without having any repercussions or, you know, ramifications against you for saying no, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like the healthy boundary stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like that piece is really important, that parents of sons and also parents and daughters, because there's, you know, there's a little bit of responsibility there too, that girls are being respectful, you know, and they're not going back to their girlfriends and making fun of the boy that just, you know, or whatever the case may be, right? The respect needs to be there as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's one aspect.
Yeah.
They're really complex. And I'm really sort of like glazing over the surface of that one. There's so much deeper that you could go with that one.
Yeah.
Another thing, you know, parents get scared of their children getting information about sexuality. Lots of parents believe that if you give your kids information, they're just going to go out and do it. And the research just doesn't show that. Typically, if a child gets good sex education, it for one thing, it delays the first sexual experiences that they have, right? So they don't actually go out and have sex. When they do, they typically use protection, so they're not going to get any STIs, provided they're using the protection correctly, right? Mm-hmm. Not going to get pregnant. So there's a little bit of fear that are happening, and it's the research just doesn't show it. The other thing too is the longer we avoid the topic with our kids and we let everything out there decide, or we let everything out there provide the information for them, mm-hmm. it's not necessarily good information. You know, porn is a topic lots of parents ask me about. It's at least the approach that I took with my own kids. I think, what was the first story of that one? We had friends over, or my daughters had friends over, and I think it was around 9 years old, and this neighbor girl's breasts were starting to develop. You know, she was going through puberty, or just starting to. And natural curiosity, she wanted to know what breasts look like. So she Googled breasts, and I had already had the conversation like, okay, guys, if you ever want to know something, don't Google it. And so
right.
neighbors running on a motorcycle club.
Right.
So anyway, my oldest daughter came and got me. She said, Mom, she's Googling boobs. And so I was like, oh my God, came upstairs. And, you know, I redirected them. And then when her mom came over, we talked about it. But I told my girls after that, I said, you know, it's not a great idea. And the reason for that is there are things you can't unsee. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, and this is how I described it to my kids, there was a movie that I saw when I was really little, and I still, even talking about it, I still have the image in my head. And for me, there's two movies. There's Jaws, when she like goes underwater the longest time I was deathly afraid of sharks. But and Alien, you know, the comes out of his stomach. Those things I can't unsee. I still see them. And the risk is there for kids if they're, you know, watching porn or discovering, running into something even. It's, there are definitely things out there that, you know, aren't giving the greatest messages, aren't giving good education, you know. But at the same time, I cannot get upset if kids are going to the internet, as, you know, if we're not talking to them and providing them good education to kind of counterbalance that. Like, they're being resourceful, you know?
Yeah.
Sadly, they're being, that's what it is. It's, they're being resourceful because they want to know something and people just aren't telling them, or the information isn't provided, and
they don't feel safe asking. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, right. I mean, that's, it seems like that one is a really easy one to fix. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly when a kid says, you know, let's see, let me think of an example. The kids hear stuff on the playground, right? Like the man pees inside the woman, right? Like that's that. Sometimes that one is one that's fairly common. Mm-hmm. And like if they just don't get good information, how do we counteract it, right? Like how do we give them the good information? If kid starts to ask, says, "Mom, I heard a man pees inside a woman when they have sex." Sometimes parents will say, "Where did you hear that? Who said that?" You know, and it'll become this 20 questions about the question, but there'll never be an answer.
Right.
And so making sure, first of all, that you're a safe person to ask. So like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that question. Let me think about it. First of all, no, you know,
like right.
you can like buy yourself some time by being honest too. Like, wow. Okay. Right. Here it is. You know, my parents never talked to me about this, but I'm really glad you're coming to me. I can at least give you the right information.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, so I have a bunch of questions now that I've heard you say all that. I'm like, okay. So how early is too early to talk about sex with kids? I'm pretty sure my 3-year-old has asked where babies come from.
Yeah. So for me, I'm less of an ages and stages person and more of a, you know, just, we're going to play it by ear by what comes up. So if your 3-year-old is already asking about babies, where babies come from, I mean, that's actually a tricky question too, because sometimes they want to know like what hospital they were born in, like where they literally came from, right?
Right, right, right.
So sometimes they're not really asking about the, you know, oh, this is the whole talk now.
Right, right, right.
You know,
you're just like, how did I get here? Right, right. Yeah.
So it's, sometimes it's just as simple as asking, you know, what do you, tell me more. What do you know already? Do you know anything already? Mm-hmm. You know, and that also buys you a little time. In my approach, I've always been one to answer as simply as I can. Mm-hmm. Like, trying to tailor it to the, you know, the
developmental level, the, kind of.
Exactly. Because kids are going to be at different levels, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Kids are going to be, I was talking to somebody just recently, even about the physical development of kids, right? Some girls get their period, or some, you know, vulva owners, to broaden it a little bit, get their periods as early as 9 nowadays. Mm-hmm. Like 10% of girls get it as early as 9. Without, I mean, I don't care too much information. I got mine once when I was 16 and then not again until I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
So 9 to 18.
Very big difference.
Is a huge range. And so for me to say, you need to talk to your kids about such and such by this age, sometimes then it sets an expectation that, mm-hmm. you know, oh, something's wrong with me now because I'm not there. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. If you're like, you're 10, now we're going to have the talk. Right.
Yeah.
And when they clearly aren't developing and you know that there's, right, they're not showing any signs of puberty, for example, you're not going to like, address the issue.
And that's totally fine. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with the child. They're developing normally. Right. They're developing, you know, I mean, if there are concerns, obviously you can go to a doctor, you can see your pediatrician or an endocrinologist or whatever, you know, whatever route the doctor guides you through. But really it's, I usually let my kids drive it. Usually they'll ask a question and you know, that's when we start talking about it. By now in our house, we talk about this stuff so freely that we actually have full comedy routines almost because, you know, somebody will be joking about something. I'll share this. This is kind of a little over the top, but they're 15 and 13 or 15 and 14 now. So you can kind of get this. So my oldest has braces and she's not been, she's probably get really upset with me sharing this story, but, she has braces and she has this new electric toothbrush and she hasn't been really using it very well. And so I said, okay, go get your toothbrush. I want to watch. And so she said, I know that I said, it's like tooth porn to me. And she kind of rolled her eyes. She's like, what, do you want to participate? My youngest was in the bedroom back in her room. She peeks her head out and she says, ooh, kinky. And my partner's in the office. He says, oral hygiene.
That's so funny. So it's just this very free topic where, like, yeah, people joke about it and you're going to be joking about it with your friends.
Yeah.
But and adults joke about it. It's not like adults don't, right? So it's like, why not be where they're at, which is they're joking. You know, they're joking about it with their friends, right? So it's like,
yeah,
you might as well.
Yeah.
All be on the same page with it. Yeah. That is
absolutely. Hilarious. Well, and it also illustrates that you can be comfortable with the topic.
Yeah.
And I was just reading another article about coaches and abuse, kind of the Larry Nassar gymnastic stuff. And typically the predators that are looking for their next victim, they're looking for people who aren't confident about themselves or about, you know, about themselves. Their bodies, all of that. And so if you're able to have an open conversation about stuff like that gives you a little more. You know, there's a level of assurance or self-assuredness that, like, okay, I know this.
Right. And it's not this like taboo topic that like adults know about, but we don't talk about, like everyone knows about, but it's, you know, it's, yeah, that makes so much sense that it would just be more comfortable in that way. It's so eye-opening because I don't know anyone who was raised in that kind of environment where your parents
talk
with you about sex, right?
I admit.
It's pretty radical, but super awesome. I can see why that would be so helpful to have that comfort level and confidence, like you said. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So what about, go ahead. You looked like you had.
Go ahead.
So what about, I know I'm going to jump a little bit to something that we had talked about as being one of the most useful things that you can help with preventing sexual abuse and stuff like a predator finding a prey, right? Like a sexual predator. Yeah. And you talked about just helping kids build healthy relationships. And so I'm going to actually go right into the step family situation where maybe there's an older step kid who isn't taught healthy boundaries in his other home. And then he comes over and you're trying to raise your kid in your home. And maybe you see some like mix up. I see this a lot. There's parenting style differences in homes and parents are concerned about boundaries specifically, not even necessarily about sexual stuff. Because people don't even ask about that stuff at this point, I feel like, but it's something I really want to bring to the conversation. So that's why I'm speaking with you today. So what do you say to them? Like, how can you help kids or navigate that when you see that stuff going on in your house?
So I'll use an example of tickling, right? Because sometimes kids are roughhousing, sometimes they're tickling or, you know, whatever the case may be. The example I'm trying to think of right now, and I just had somebody walk by.
You got distracted.
let me think here.
Tickling.
When the kids are tickling, the aha moment I had around this was my kids were little and I was like over them and they're laying on the ground and tickling and I had this, it was almost like a flashback or I could see myself in their position in that like, oh my God, I'm going to pee soon or something because this person just won't stop. And this sort of overwhelmed feeling of they're so much bigger than me. I'm not going to be able to get them to stop. You know, how do I get out of this? This doesn't feel safe or fun anymore. Like, how do I stop this? So I said to my daughter, I paused and I said, you know, if we're ever tickling and you want me to stop, I want you to say stop and I'll freeze.
Right.
And we'll see how that goes. Let's try it. So she said, okay. So we tried again. I went in and I was tickling her and going a little longer. And she's like, stop. And I just froze, held my position. And she waited a few minutes and then she kind of, or a few seconds. And she kind of looked at me, squinted her nose. And she said, go. And so we started tickling again. But in that moment, she got to learn that I was going to stop when she said to stop.
Right.
She got to learn that she had the ability to say when she wanted everything to stop. And she also learned that I wasn't going to be judgmental and be like, oh, you don't want me to tickle you anymore. Or like some, you know, bulls, you know, the attitude that some people have when they try to like guilt trip you. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So like, oh, you don't want me to tickle you anymore or whatever. Like I just froze and she figured out that I was safe, and when she told me to go, we'd go again, and we'd go until she stopped or we got bored.
Right.
So I guess the suggestion would be, you know, using something like that, using an example like that, where maybe they're wrestling or fighting or whatever, and being able to say no or stop, and to have that be respected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like without a question, when someone says stop or no, like stop. there's no negotiation.
Right.
And that's just how things are going to be, you know. It seems to be one of the things that, like, it can be a house rule. It could be, just sort of like modus, you know, normal operating mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know kids wrestle, you know.
Right, sure.
And sometimes they're teasing each other, like, these two will tease each other, you know, siblings do. Mm-hmm. And typically I can be at the other end of the house and I'll hear one of them yell, no consent. And then like everything stops.
Huh. Yeah.
So that's what happens when you teach kids about consent. They'll use it pretty distinctly when they need it.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. So we can be a good example and we can kind of set a house rule, like no means no and stop what you're doing. And I think it can have an impact, but I also think if they're going to another house and that isn't in place, it can be kind of challenging to, like, you know, build that kind of, establish that kind of a thing.
If you don't have buy-in from the other parent, it can be really hard.
Right.
I guess it would also depend on if you do have a working relationship with the other parent, right? Because some people have a good co-parenting setup where, right, you know, the wishes of one will be honored in the other house as well.
Right.
But I know that there are other places, you know, other homes where that, you know, it doesn't happen necessarily.
Right. Right. Like
completely different styles or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, seeing if you can get the buy-in is usually the best bet, but, you know, definitely setting that as like, in this house, we do not do this. You know, it's a respect thing. I mean, certainly that's at least how I've positioned it with my kids. It's respect.
Right.
Respecting the other person's autonomy.
Yeah. And I think too, like something that stepmoms can control regardless of what's going on with the other parenting is that they can be an example. Like when I say no, I mean no. And so if my no is violated, there will be I will remove myself from the situation, or I'll remove my kid from the situation if I need to, or, you know what I mean? Like there'll be a very like actual statement of like, my no means no. And if you violate that, you know, and I think that example of being someone who respects themselves and means what they say and can be very powerful as an influence.
Yeah. Well, and something you just said reminded me too, even saying a maybe, like sometimes parents will say maybe because they want the kid to stop asking.
Right.
I mean, I've done it.
Maybe later. We'll see.
Exactly. Maybe later. We'll see. It's like, just stop asking me right now. But ultimately I really mean no. And what's wrong with me saying no?
Mm.
Right.
Hmm.
I mean, it's even a boundary that I've had to figure out for myself, because sometimes sometimes our kids are learning that no is negotiable because you're not being firm with it. Or they're learning that maybe, if you say maybe, they can just continue to, you know,
ask
and eventually you'll cave. I mean,
right.
I mean, there's a lot of things that we teach our kids inadvertently about about ourselves.
Yeah, it's true.
They can get away with.
Right.
The other thing too, like, so being attentive to your maybes even is really important, mm-hmm. but like an enthusiastic yes. So mm-hmm. I know here in California, there was lots of conversation about colleges teaching enthusiastic yes, and actually it was around the country as well. And it actually, it's not that difficult. What's going on?
I'm going.
Oh, hi. Hello. Bye. Gotta get that goodbye in. Have fun. She's actually going to sex ed class.
Oh, wow. How funny. Mama,
so not only did
they going to sex ed.
They get it here, but they also get it from OWL. But I'll talk about that in a bit. But the enthusiastic yes stuff, you know, encouraging kids that it's not just no means no. It also means, like, when you do want to do something, you should actually be looking for somebody who's really excited and wants to. Like, don't look to coerce someone or convince them that they should do the thing.
Right.
Exactly. The I guess so, to me, is a no.
Right.
You know, maybe you're not quite ready. We'll wait. Whatever, whatever the case may be. I mean, certainly, if it's a sexual situation and the teenager, you know, is getting pushed by their boyfriend or girlfriend and they sort of cave because they're tired of the partner asking. Like, that's not an optimal situation, obviously.
Right.
And so my daughter the other day, my oldest, this has happened a few times now. I was in the kitchen making dinner and my oldest gets like, she'll come bouncing in and she'll say, "Mom, can I have a kiss?" And I don't know what I was doing. I think I was making dinner and I was like, okay. And she looked at me, she like touched, you know, held my shoulder and like pushed me back. She's like, "I want an enthusiastic yes."
Ah, that's so funny.
So,
yeah. Right. Like, I don't want just like an okay, I guess kiss. I want like an enthusiastic yes. Yeah, that's so interesting. And I guess goes for everything too. Like, as you're saying that, I'm realizing that when my son asks me things and it's okay, I'm like, yeah, that's fine. You know, that's fine, I guess. Or, you know, I'm kind of very like vague about it. Like, yeah, okay. You know, but how different it would be to be like, yes, that's something I can say yes to. Like, I'm happy to say yes to this thing that you're wanting, you know, and that I don't always get to say yes to what you want. And now I do. So that's,
celebrate it.
right. So how, and I know you mentioned like how to teach kids how to have healthy friendships, and that's probably in line with what we're talking about, but I imagine even from the young age of 3 you can teach kids how to have healthy friendships.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
so you know, the longer I teach sex ed, there are a couple things that really jump out at me. We as parents, even myself, I tended to stress out about the conversation about penises and vaginas and like, what is the activity and what are people doing? And I really started to realize that what should happen before having conversations about sex? You know, well, they should be figuring out how to have healthy relationships, good friendships. Like, what does it mean to be a good friend? What does it mean, you know, when someone wants to bully someone, like, are you being a good friend to the person that's being bullied? Like, how do you step up for that person too? So it's, healthy friendships are definitely something that need to happen. The coaching around that needs to happen before, you know, having deep dive conversations about sexual relationships. At least that's my opinion on it. I think it's really easy to model healthy friendships as well, right? Like, how do you talk with your girlfriends? And that can be a tricky one too, because, you know, sometimes we get with girlfriends, we can start gossiping and kids are around, they hear that. So we kind of have to be, careful what kind of friend we're being.
Yeah. It makes us really look at ourselves, right? Like, is this the kind of talk I want to have? you know, yeah. for, is this the kind of talk I want to teach? I noticed that, I was raised around a lot of kind of critical conversation about other people. And I noticed that around certain friends, I do that. And then I'm like, wait, I don't want my son to be raised around, or my stepson to be raised around gossipy, critical conversation about other people. Like that's, you know, so then it's like, how do I shift that?
Yeah.
So that
he's having
more positive types of conversations, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That has a big impact on us.
Yeah, I can attest to this one because when I was growing up, I remember conversations about so-and-so getting pregnant out of wedlock and hearing the adults in the room saying like, oh, if my daughter ever did that to me, I would disown her. Like, you know, me being little kid next room, hearing this, like very clearly those adults are not safe. If I were ever in trouble, if I were ever to find myself in a situation, whatever the situation might be, like, clearly,
right.
Red flag. So right. Yeah, we have to be kind of careful of that stuff.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I love what you said too about before you even talk about sex, teaching healthy relationships in general, right? Like that's so few people actually have healthy relationships, and it's because we don't often learn it from our parents, and then they don't talk about it at school, and where we get like poor examples of it at school in our like sex ed classes, which you know.
I had conversations with my kids about dating. You know, we've talked about love. You know, really once I started teaching the college kids, that was really when I started to realize the importance of things like love and dating as well. One of the conversations, one of the chapters we talk about, you know, the different theories of love, and there's one that's actually my favorite. And I tend to think that this also models what happens in like as kids are growing up as well. But Sternberg's triangular theory of love, which is fascinating. It also goes into like teaching healthy relationships, right? Let's see, the top one is intimacy. And in Sternberg's definition, intimacy is not sexual intimacy. It's like really deep friendship and liking to spend time with that person. And another corner is commitment. Like you're really dedicated to that person and you're going to, you know, be with them for the long haul. Mm-hmm. And then another corner is passion. And that's the one that's more like some of that is sexual passion as well. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is like, at least in the theory, the perfect or the ideal is to have all three. And that was considered consummate love, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But I think when our kids are growing up, they're kind of figuring out each of these corners, right? They might not have all three with one person. But the intimacy thing to me is the, like, your friends, right?
Right, right.
And the passion thing might be somebody you have a crush on, mm-hmm. you know? And then the one in the corner, the commitment one, to me feels like besties, right? Mm-hmm. Like, right. these are the people that you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
So talking about healthy friendships, talking about love and all the different kinds of love the dating thing follows that, right? Like, I think we're also doing a little bit of disservice by jumping into conversations about sex without having a lot of conversation creating, you know, about relationships. Yeah. Like,
because yeah,
how do we go from one to the other?
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to note too, something that you spoke to that I think is really important for stepmoms is paying attention to where your stepkids are at developmentally, which might not be, there's often expectations, especially with stepkids, of like where they should be at a certain age, and they're often not there, especially if they've been going back and forth between two houses. There could be some developmental, emotional regulation that's not there that maybe could be another kid with a natural family or whatever. And kids are just different, right? They have their own makeup, personality, parenting, like it all goes into how a kid is functioning. So for a stepmom to really observe their stepkids and see like where they're at and what they're ready for and make sure that they're, you know, not just like, hey, we need to talk about sex, but they're like asking questions about how they feel about their friends and asking questions about, you know, what's comfortable and what's not. And like, you know, just getting to know them from an observer standpoint so that they can be a safe place, a non-judgmental safe place if the stepkids ever do have issues I think someone can definitely play that role where sometimes, you know, a bio mom or even a dad might not have the education or the awareness to be able to be that safe space. So a stepmom can be like the kind of outside observer, safe person who like welcomes those conversations, right? And is like curious and interested. And I think that is a potentially powerful role. So yeah, I appreciate
it. It definitely is. Yeah. It definitely is. Stepmoms have a lot of influence.
Yeah, it's true. I know. So we're going to wrap up in just a second here. Tell our viewers where they can find you and what you're offering today.
So yeah, I provided a link that you can find attached to the video, I guess. I have a freebie, which is basically the 5 building blocks to a healthy sexuality. It sort of breaks down what each block represents. We didn't have time to go through it in here, but the handout or the worksheet kind of gives it to you.
Great. And real quick, can you give us like a little brief thing about the female sexual empowerment? As you said, those 5 building blocks of healthy sexuality, I'm realizing that the stepmoms, like adults, might have to learn those themselves so that they can teach them to the kid, right?
Definitely.
So tell us about your female empowerment, or what is it?
Female sexual empowerment. Yeah. So I have a course that I'm probably halfway through. We're sort of scripting everything out so that when we do the videos, we've got everything's clear and I'm not missing anything. But it's a workshop specifically for women, moms or not, people who are interested in really learning more about their sexuality. There are going to be fun assignments and a community-based workshop that you'll kind of get to see that you're not alone for a lot of things.
Nice. That sounds awesome. So, and your website's mamasutra.com, right?
TheMamaSutra.net. Yeah, TheMamaSutra.net. And it's TheMamaSutra.net.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so we'll have a link to that too so people can stay connected. All right, great. Well, thank you so much for being here. It's been so awesome talking with you, and I'm sure the audience will appreciate your input.
Hopefully they'll appreciate the vulnerable shares I shared today.
I'm sure they will. The more real, the better. Love that.
My face is a little red here.
All right, stepmamas, I'll see you next time. Thanks for watching.
Hello, everyone. Natalie here. I hope you've been enjoying this podcast. I hope it's inspired you to use your challenges for growth. And I'm so glad you've gotten to listen. And I also hope it helps you realize that you're not alone or crazy. It is a very challenging role to be in a step-parenting position. So I wanted to be sure to invite you to my free Stepmom Strong Facebook community. It's a group of stepmoms who are also in a growth-oriented mindset. The women in there are amazing supports to each other, so make sure you check it out. You can head to www.facebook.com/groups/stepmomstrong. And be sure to answer the entry questions when you request to join. Otherwise, you will not be let in. So seriously, be sure to answer those so I can let you in. I'd love to have you join us. Again, it's a great group. So I hope you'll come find us on Facebook/groups/stepmomstrong. No spaces or underscores or anything. All right, thanks. Thanks again for listening. And I look forward to seeing you in there. Bye.